Hey, I'm Leonard Sekionda.
And I'm Saf Siddiqui.
And we've got Safe here in quarantine-free podcast studio. And we're here for Genius Dropouts. I cannot wait to understand and open your mind, my brother, because I feel that this is the perfect time to do it.
I love that you're wearing a mask.
Genius Dropouts, stay tuned.
Honestly, I don't understand how you can drop out and call yourself a genius. Does that make you a genius dropout? The Genius Dropouts podcast
with Leonard Sekionda.
Wow. Listen, we have gone above and beyond. We have dodged shivering people. We've walked past runny nose. We have gone against the law and we have come in maskless to bring you value, to bring you insight and to help you with your perspective in stepping into this beautiful world called business. I'm Leonard Sekionda, your host of Genius Dropouts, the podcast which is designed to really exploring the theory behind dropping out of things. And I don't just mean business, but I mean in relationships, emotions, friends, situations, and just seeing the pivotal role in having to adjust and change and how it has and can affect and put you in a position of growth as opposed to fear. I have a special guest with me today, Mr. Saif Siddiq, the CEO, the founder of Issue Solar, and many more things. But listen, first and foremost, thank you for risking your life today.
I'm here.
Thank you. Let's give him some of that.
Thank you for being here.
Give him some of that.
Thanks to my peoples. What's up?
Man, thank you very much. I know this was last minute, but I think with the serious epidemic that we're having right now, there are two ways we can react. The initial way is fear and to do less. And you said something interesting to me. You said everyone's using this as a moment to do less. And I find that in grace, in the moments of chaos, there's an element of grace. And being productive is one of them. So I thought, why not just speak with you and just really understand, not just about your business acumen, which is impressive. I mean, you've gone from, you know, having your product viewed over 3 billion times, if I'm right? 2 billion? Yeah. I mean, let's throw a billion on this, 2020, yeah? When did you stop counting? You've had a number of successful endorsements and collaborations over the years. And more importantly, I've just witnessed you as a friend and somebody that I met in New York who was pretty much on his hustle, doing collaborations with Jay-Z and holding pop-ups and just watching you really be what people sell on the Instagram and the YouTube. And that is an entrepreneur putting his money, his heart, his energy and his time where his mouth is. So please, Saif, just
get, that was a nice intro.
I mean, I have to be
that
honest.
You know,
I have to be
that
honest. Just fill me in a bit about where, you know, for those that don't know who Saif is, please explain to them.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a good question. I'm from Holland, born and raised. My dad's Indian. My mom is South American. She's from Suriname, a tiny country that not a lot of people know. I started my first business when I was 14. I come from an entrepreneur-like family. My dad's an entrepreneur, my brother's an entrepreneur, my sister's an entrepreneur. And I just like creating stuff, whether it's a product, a service, an art piece, a t-shirt, a song, it doesn't matter. I like creating content and came up with a few businesses in the last couple of years, and some of them did well, some of them didn't do, most of them didn't do well. But I'm just a normal kid, man, like an everyday kid that's trying to figure out life and what we're trying to do and trying to get better. I'm a very positive person, if that helps. I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain yourself.
Yeah, it is tricky, but I mean,
I'm 32, if that helps. Currently live between London and Silicon Valley, New York, and Amsterdam, where my family is.
I mean, I met you at an interesting time, just as I was saying in the intro. You was in New York.
2016
is crazy, time flies, and it was during Fashion Week, and you had the Issue scarf, which is essentially has a technology, right, which has that anti-paparazzi effect, so
yeah,
people take a picture
pictures.
And it blocks out your face. And at the time when I met you, there was, you know, all of this energy around you, and you had all of this you had staff over there, you had boxes of scarves and all of this inventory, and I mean, as much as there were people around you, it was still very a one-man operation with people that were trying to either, from my perspective, which were either trying to impress you or get your attention or seem like they're helping you. And I was very moved by your defiance in still proceeding as people came and went in that scenario, because I saw a lot of people. I mean, I was out there for maybe 3 weeks and you were there for like 2 months or something. So I remember when I first got there, you were around, I mean, pretty much every other day you were around different people, and some seemed like they were trying to sell you on one idea and some were actually helping. But it was just very, there was a thin line between people that were really there to help
lesson.
Yeah.
Such a good life lesson.
Let's dive into that. What was that experience like being out there in New York? And you're not from New York, let's be very clear. You're from Amsterdam.
I'm from Amsterdam. So this was 4 years ago. And I experienced New York the way you're supposed to experience New York. It's very intense. It's very hardcore. People are resentful. Like, they just go for it. It's very transactional, if that's even a thing. It's quite intense because I'm an emotional person as well. So if, when people use you and your personality of, you know, you're positive or a happy person, people like to take. It's a conversation I was having yesterday, actually, about how people love to take. And some people are in the business of giving. But after a while, you end up broke if you just do it all the time. And New York was a very good life lesson. I wouldn't change a thing, even though a lot of people came and went, like you said. You've seen the people. And I'm glad it happened. At least I know where I stand. You know what I mean? Before that, I was just naive and I was just like, oh, okay, cool. This is how it works and everyone's going to try and do it together. But there's not everyone is there to support you. A lot of people are, but not everyone is. And, you know, you just learn that. And like you said, having a massive team to, it's a one-man band at the end of the day. And that's something that I learned that, I'm a one-man band.
Yeah.
I need to stop trying to have a bigger team and a bigger office and all of that. I'm just me, you know, simple with my phone and a laptop, and I'm good and happy.
And it's interesting because you may not know, I don't know if I have, I haven't told you, but for me, just on the subject of dropping out or people kind of fading away, I met you at a very, very, very interesting time in my life, 2006, and I had been developing my come up. I had a full team in Aldrich. We were spending time rebranding the business. You know what it's like. You're paying people out. It's, you know, you're beating them to the office to make sure that you show you're motivated. You know, you're really consumed with these people. And to be honest, as the boss, you become vested in individuals. So you kind of, you know, you're speaking in the evenings. They become friends. They come to your house. And I had literally just prior to meeting you, literally not only had a major breakup with my ex-partner at the time, but I had literally my whole team leave me, right? So I remember the only thing I remember being in such a state where I was like, wow, like I've literally lost my company per se because everyone's left.
And that was during a tough time.
Yeah.
It always goes.
Yeah, and
when
I
things
remember,
are good, everyone's there.
It's true, but I think this is what I've learned, right? It's a process, but at that time in my mind, I hadn't quantified people that I'm so invested in one day just not being part of anything from, and that was my girlfriend and that was my team at one time. And the only thing I had done is booked a flight to New York, right? I had only booked a flight to New York. So I remember, literally I got on that plane by the skin of it because I had lost my appetite. I stopped eating. I was just like in disarray. I was confused. And I remember a few friends of mine was like, listen, just go anyway. Just go Fashion Week, maybe clear your mind. And I had a few friends in New York that I said, look, I'm going through it a bit. Let me come over to New York and just kind of clear my mind. And it's funny because I wasn't actually under any financial restraint. The irony of it was I felt more broke than ever because of the pressure of everything. Because I had just raised money for my come up as well. So I had the expectation of like meeting the demands of the investor. And all of that was running through my mind. And I remember jumping on the plane, being exhausted. And I remember getting to New York and still kind of being blurry for the first 1 or 2 days. And then I remember like there was a moment when I came to 60 Les and I saw you. And
Shout out to 60 Les.
and I saw you you had so much energy and you just had an aura and a decor and you was carrying yourself and you was just on your laptop. You was living, breathing and eating. And like I said, I could see these people around you and I could see that they were, some were helping and some were just kind of trying to be pop, because you were very popular, let's be honest. Your stuff was on the news, you were on CNN, and all of this excitement during Fashion Week was like very heavily around you. So seeing just your energy and just seeing how you moved, and you wasn't from New York and you were just kind of, you know, very bold in your movement, it really just woke my spirit up. It just, like, I found myself, like, connected to you in a way that I was like, wow, like, I'm watching somebody and reminding me that, wow, like, you can reinvent your team. And he's meeting people on, you know, you were meeting people on a Tuesday and they were part of your team on a Thursday that you never knew from anywhere. And I was like, yeah, it reminded me, it's like, no, that's the flow of life. Like, people go, but at the same time, if you have an open lens, you can invite more people in. And when you look at business and you have the ability to take your emotion out, I think it was really powerful to witness you just owning that situation. And it was as tiring as it was, as overwhelming as it was, just witnessing you personally just gave me like the vault. And it's funny because you went on the stock exchange and I went, I think maybe the month after. And
yeah,
it was like,
Cheddar you did, right?
Yeah, Cheddar. And it was like, wow, I remember us talking about it and you talking about the experience and all the other things you had going on. But my point being is that what period in your journey this far have you had to encounter, whether it's the business or if it's your personal life, having to let go or drop out of anything that, you know, to you at the time was probably, you know, scary, but kind of paid out in the end?
I think what you're talking about really is making sacrifice and being able to make sacrifices. And I'm someone that likes to put myself out in uncomfortable positions. As soon as I get comfortable somewhere, I'm like, oh no, okay, wait, I can't grow from here. So I need to go and do something else. And New York was a big part of that. So similar to how you just booked a flight and went out, I did the exact same thing, right? So, yeah, I don't know. It's just a very interesting time to see people come and go. And it's more of a learning experience to me personally. Mm-hmm.
But what actual incident, could you pinpoint a time in your journey this far where you've actually had to drop something, someone, or a situation out in order to evolve to the next level?
I think I do that a lot. I don't know if that's a healthy thing or not. I have, like, I'm not in a relationship. I know, do I have commitment issues? I don't know. You know what I mean? I just like change. And to come up with a particular example, I think New York is a good example of New York is having a lot of friends and people that I met there in the first couple of, like, first part of the month. And then the store was in the second part of the month.
Yeah.
And then the people that were there the first part of the month that were part of the team weren't part and didn't do what they were supposed to do with the second part of it. I don't know. You were there. You saw how you had to eventually do everything yourself when times got rough. And that's just part of life. I don't know. I don't feel really bad about it or whatever. You know,
because
it's a good learning experience to me.
But
that's what it is.
I think it's a muscle that you're kind of unaware of, but it's generally a struggle of a lot of people. And it really is. It's that idea of the change that comes on the other side of what we're used to and gambling, you know, because it's just like any weight on a boat, you have to let go of the weight for the boat to float, right? And I know, you know, you have seemed to have mastered it or have come at peace with it.
I am quite at
but
peace
with it. What advice would you give for someone, and I get it all the time, that is, you know, fearful of dropping out that situation, you know?
Taking that risk is
key, taking the risk, yeah.
You know, if you take that risk, then things happen. If you drop off, like, I don't like surrounding myself with, we talked about this, I think, in an interview for my come up, dropping the negative things around you. And if you feel like something's weighing you down, then that's not going to help you grow. You know what I mean? So if you get rid of that little weight, then you're free to go do whatever, you know? And it just, like we were talking about before, is I decided to move out of London after being here for 14 years because I started to feel comfortable. I don't know where I'm going. I want to go to a place that, obviously, now with the whole situation, I don't know where the hell, when or where I'm going. But it's just nice to be able to take that risk because you're just going to do new things, you know? If you're stuck in the same routine with the same people, do the same things over and over again, you're not going to change. Your results won't change unless you change. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
It's very, very true. You see, a lot of people, and I'm going to just put this straight out, a lot of people look at the e-commerce, fashion, business as a business where if I make something, I get an influencer, it sells, you know, or if I get this on Beckham's page, it's going to sell.
Was that easy.
You
know?
What is the truth about, I mean, you are in this, you've been in this for years. What is the truth about cash flow of a business which has to have inventory and profit? Would you say that the real gain of an e-commerce from your understanding or awareness is in the licensing or selling of the brand, or would you say it's actually something that's sustainable while it continues?
I think maintaining the brand should be the key to spread it out over a long term instead of trying to get emotionally attached to something very short term, try and sell as much you can on the short term. It's people say that life is really short. It's really not. It's quite long, you know. So if you like spread it out and don't try to do too much too quick, and you take more calculated risks. Yeah, of course, like I said, you know, taking risks as an entrepreneur, I love taking risks, going all in and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, you have responsibilities. It's not just you. It's a brand. It's a company that you're working on. Mm-hmm. I think spread it out is key, and save for the hard times. That's something that Wall Street has taught me, is when things are going good, expect it to go bad.
Mm.
And then try and save and try and build for that moment when it is a rainy day.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like even now with the world where we are, you know, it's survival of the fittest now. Mm. You know what I mean? Like all these small businesses are getting hurt, and, you know, we just got to try and sustain and be smart about it. It's a tough business.
Because I get it a lot. Yeah. I mean, I've done merch on a miniature scale, like literally, like not even past the thousands, right? And of items per se, but I meet young entrepreneurs all the time, and I'm aware of the model, but I always get stuck in the advice of the expansion of it, because, like, you know, there is always the initial investment of inventory, the marketing investment, the packaging investment, and of course, if you are going to get influencers,
operations,
the cost of that.
You got sales.
So what do I tell the 20-year-old that is coming to me that is asking me how he can survive through this business? Am I telling him that he can survive through the inventory sales? Am I telling him that he should raise money? Am I telling him that he should build a brand and license his business? How would he financially survive? What am I telling him to look for in that business model?
I would suggest take 10 of the most important things that you need to run your business and spread out your time, money, energy, focus across those 10 things. So it'd be 10% of your budget goes to inventory, 10% of it goes to marketing, 10% goes to operations, 10% goes to research and development, whatever it is, whatever business you're in. I think you can only do 3 things well at the same time. You can only manage 5 things, but you can only like accomplish like 10 things overall, I would suggest. So spread everything out, 10%, 10%, 10%.
So if he's 20 years old, how what is he looking for? Inventory sales, or is he looking to raise money, or is he looking to?
I mean, it depends on the business.
I'm just talking about not the logistics, just the money. Because at the end of the month, they have to pay £1,500 for him to survive for the next 12 months. Where should his focus financially be to cover that rent, per se, on a smaller scale? Let's put it that way.
I think it's a valid question, but the answer depends on what stage you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Of the business, right? Whether you're starting and you need an investment, like you need capital to start something, or whether it's like how I did it was I made one scarf and sold one scarf and bought two, made two. And then I sold the two and I made four. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then that just grew organically to the thousands and thousands of units of scarves or phone cases or hoodies or whatever. But yeah, I wouldn't suggest like going in full on your inventory, like 100% of your budget or spend too much money on your website, or like Shopify is free. Like there's all these things that's possible, and
because it's being missold, if I'm honest. I mean, there's a lot of like, you know, how to get rich on e-commerce, you know, overnight. And I know that the inventory and inventory sticking can cost you more for storage and more importantly, just for dead cash if you can't move it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, even looking at your scenario, you know, they might look at an inch of it and just think, okay, if I build a brand and I just start selling, it's gonna work because people want scarves.
It will work if you keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it and you stop after 6 months, it's not going to be a brand. It's not going to work. You need to spend, like, the rule is 10,000 hours, right? If you do something well, if you do something for 10,000 hours, that's only when you get good at it. If you do it for 8,000 hours, you still don't have that brand that you think you've got.
So should 20-year-old Timothy, should he stay at home until he's got income? What would you say to 20-year-old Timothy?
To stay home and to what, sir?
Should 20-year-old Timothy, he's, like I said, he's got this vision. Should I advise him to stay home, make a certain amount, and then not pay the $1,500 a month rent? Or am I telling him to do the hours? And then
put in the hours. Like, don't
but
think
from
of
his,
it as
from
a...
his mum's house. Because you got to remember, you're very experienced, and you're probably more savvy than a lot of the newer entrepreneurs that are going into it. And a lot of people are just diving into stuff. So people are just diving into rent and then expecting the rent to be covered by the e-commerce that they've done, and they don't understand the sacrifice, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to advise people, because I'm more about financial stability than I am about getting rich overnight, realistically, because I think that's a theory, you know.
Yeah.
I'm 10 years into having a business and I'm still at it, and I'm still, you know, having financial ups and downs and always in, you know, put risk in my money. But I think the glossy advert that social media shows is that it's just this and that equals that. And what I'm trying to, especially as you're very successful at what you do, I'm trying to articulate the reality of what somebody has to really, you know.
I see what you're saying. I think if you really truly believe in your company or your brand or whatever, then I'm a strong believer of just going in and taking that risk. Because when you hit rock bottom, that's when things appear that are really necessary to you. Like, the most important things matter and you do the right things.
Mm-hmm.
So working yourself into, like, that mode of survival will somehow work out. Like, for me, if I look at my own experience, I did take those risks of not being able to pay rent. I've had moments where my Oyster card wouldn't work, or, you know, ramen noodles. Like, I've been a student. Like, it's just part of life.
Mm-hmm.
But only because I've been through all those hardships have I been able to turn that around.
Mm.
If I didn't risk not being able to pay rent, I would have paid rent a couple of years ago, and that's it.
Mm.
You know? And if it, like, rent is a good example, because it is a major responsibility. But there's, I always use a saying of, if it doesn't matter 5 years from now, it's not really that important.
Mm.
Right? So if I couldn't afford rent for 2 months, 5 years from now, I've forgotten about it.
That's a good point.
You know, but if I spent it on calculated risk, let's say that. Don't be stupid. Don't just go out and put your hands up in the sky and wait for it to drop. That's not how it works. You have to really grind, and you really have to not sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the kind of sacrifices that we're talking about. You have to, me personally, I don't know, it might be one of the reasons why I'm not in a relationship, is because I can't focus my mind on and my business and my family. Add something else, and it just becomes too much.
Mm.
So right now, it's very focused, driven, you know? And that's what you got to do when you're hungry.
Mm.
And if you can't afford rent, what happens to your brain? You get freaking hungry.
Mm.
And then you practice, and you try to test, selling this works, selling that doesn't work, asking for this doesn't work. Like, you try to test and figure out where you are, and something sparks, and something works. And then the universe or God, somehow, some way, it works out, you know. But, I mean, like I said, responsibility of paying rent or maintaining a family, and, you know, these are all social obligations that are very important.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying go out and put it all on the color red at a casino.
Mm.
But if you work towards something and you truly believe it, then scrap all of that. Yes, just go and not pay rent and put that £1,000 or £1,500 into a couple of t-shirts, sell a couple, get hit, you know, get up and go again. And eventually it'll work out.
So you're a big believer in attitude and just putting it on. I mean, I'm a massive believer. I mean, that's all I know personally.
That's all we know.
I never bought a course before I started. I just did it.
Yeah.
But you know, that's I think that's very valuable advice. That's like the truest to its core, because it is true. I've got a chapter in my book called Rock Bottom, and it is about that moment of really nowhere to go, that you find these endorphins and these ideas and these, you learn how
to... But sometimes you don't know where to go.
Yeah, you don't know.
Like
yeah.
right now, we don't know where to go.
Yeah.
So we're in this gray area.
Mm, but it creates moments like this.
It creates moments like this. Yeah,
so, and yeah. But you know, that's on the lower end, right? And I've learned something new, especially with the fashion industries. And I don't know how many people really research, even on a streetwear brand level. You know, the goal, the end of the goal, is the goal to get my brand in a high street store. I mean, this is my knowledge so far. So a high street store like a Selfridges and a Barney & Noble's,
yeah,
that is a loss leader. You're not really going to make money from that because... They take all the margins, right? Yeah. But it's a good look, and you can use that to get more buyers to buy more of your stuff.
Sure, yeah.
In the independent brands, and then you have the concept of selling out drops, which I think is probably the most cash orientated way, where you have a collaboration and it sells out, and that way, which is a great model for businesses to have a space for streetwear or a fashion brand to be in, but it's very limited.
Yeah.
Then you have the licensing. So that's like what the off-whites do. So they get bought by a big fashion house who licenses it for them for 5 years, and they don't own the brand for that 5 years. Virgil doesn't own Off-White anymore. It would be licensed to this big fashion house, and then they just print the Off-White on different styles and license it off to different collaborations.
They still own it.
They own it, but it's not in... Yeah, he gets royalties. He's not involved in the day-to-day. I mean, probably oversees things here and there, but then he goes on to Gucci. What would you say the goal for you with the success you've built with this brand so far, would it be to... the final one would be to sell it. What would you say at this stage from your perspective would be a successful or a viable route that you'd want to see it translate to?
To be really honest, I don't want it to be just a fashion brand. So if I make an issue phone or like something else, because I want it to be a lifestyle brand, so I don't really want to stick to selling t-shirts and hoodies and that kind of stuff. I really want to create larger products that help people eventually. Like, to me, like, one of the coolest thing that I think that Virgil did, apart from Supreme and Louis Vuitton and all these other things, is IKEA. You know, making products with IKEA, to me, that's dope. That's cool. That's something different, you know? And so with my own brand, I'd love to be able to do something that's not the norm. And I just want it to be a lifestyle brand. Obviously, fashion is where it's at now, and it works. And, you know, we have crazy collections coming out. I'm doing all the licensing routes as well. And we have crazy collaborations and partnerships with different brands, really cool brands coming out end of this year and next year that I've already been working on the last 2 years and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I just want to grow it into whatever the market needs, you know, like whatever that void is, I want to try and get it there and hopefully be able to partner up with some like large tech giants or like cybersecurity companies and all that kind of cool stuff. You know, like I have the solar business.
So that is a form of licensing, right? Because you're still involved in the brand, but you're kind of giving it the same brand over different variety of products.
Because
I think that does kind of fall under that.
I mean, I still have like...
Because you did a collaboration recently, right? Just with a... Like, so you did a collaboration with a baller, right?
Baller. Yeah, that's coming out.
So they're a brand and you're a brand.
Yeah.
So are you giving them permission to use your brand with their brand, or is it just a...
It's a partnership, right? Okay. So it's basically like... it's a partnership licensing agreement, but I still get to have like final say on designs and like say, okay, nah, I don't think this works, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm still part in that boardroom. Like,
but
I've
got to be honest, you're in the rarefied atmosphere. You don't realize that people don't know this stuff. They really don't.
Yeah,
I mean, people are literally just trying to sell products.
I don't know this. I didn't know this either until I started doing it.
Yeah.
Right? At first I was like, okay, I need to make a t-shirt and sell the t-shirt to one person. And then I went, okay, if I make a couple of t-shirts and sell it to a store or an affiliate or someone else, then, you know, I can grow. And if I work with distributors and agents and work with other brands that already have distribution and trying to figure out manufacturing, like another advice, if someone's out there trying to do a t-shirt label or a clothing collection, instead of like going the old school route of creating your own patterns and cutting it out and shaping it and buying fabrics and shipping out to the factory and getting the factory to make it and then getting all your labels from another factory to send it over, like it's a long ass winded process, right?
I agree.
it's better to just, you know, take a hoodie and, you know, just replicate it.
But can
and,
I say, change can I say the difference between this generation and last generation, millennials and Generation X, and even millennials per se, is, and this is why I find it so important to kind of get this information out to the general population, because the difference between now and before, like you mentioned, a whole array of experiences which you put yourself through, right? Mm-hmm. And the industry stranded right now is to buy the shortcut. People are spending money trying to buy the quick way it's done, right? Mm-hmm. And they're buying this course for $2,000 on how to be an e-commerce expert, or they're buying this program on how to, you know, do shipping and importing. And I think we can save a lot more people money if we are saying to them, not how to, but saying, hey, you can stop spending that $2,000 or that £1,000 to surpass that experience and actually go through it, but go through it with this intention. If you're going to go through the shipping and so and so and so, you want to get to a place where a brand like what you're doing is offering you a license in collaboration, or later on you can license that brand to some technology or to some solar things. And I think people don't know this stuff. And I think the luxury that we have is we have put our bodies on the line, unfortunately, our minds on the line, our humanity on the line.
We've been through it.
And I think the best way we can contribute to not even the next generation, but to people, is to really help them to have clarity on exactly what you should be focusing on. And I think the more that kind of, and that's why I was so like back and forth, because I think the more that is clear, I think that the more money we save for people. And I think it's unfortunate, but it is really, what you're even saying is very true. It's experience, and it's rolling into it, but it's not cutting it by buying it and, you know, and trying to, you know, shortcut it. And it's an interesting thing. And I think what happened the other day, you were speaking to me about something really interesting. You were talking to me about, you know, and it now is more fitting than ever, but you were talking to me about the entrepreneurship, and you actually said to me, hey, Leonard, you said, hey, like, what about the side of the journey, which, you know, is rough? You know, what about this, you know, it's easy to come across motivated and be up and, you know, giving people some good advice, but what about the journey? And the truth is that
it's hard.
It's fucking hard.
Fuck.
It's really hard.
It's so hard. It's very lonely. Yeah. It's very tough. Things don't go the way that you want it to or think it will. Or it's a lonely journey, but only the strong survive. Like, you have to get through it.
And
at the end of the day, no matter what, there's no easy route. You gotta crawl and you gotta fight through it. And then only, but I also believe in the result, when you do get it will be worth so much more to you because you've been through it. You know, instead of hitting success too soon.
But I think in the same breath, I'm sure you've got your way of dealing with it, but I've also got my way. I'm very, very big on information and people I exchange with. I'm very formatic, and I see that more and more as I build my relationship, that there's a way in which I do things, right? I would remove watching horror films. I would remove creating anxiety for myself. I tend to consume myself with a routine of listening to like a Tony Robbins in the morning or something empowering in the morning. I kind of remove myself from news. There's a lot of things that I do to lower my the amount of compound happening to me, because it's already hard, right? What do you do?
Well, it's really funny. So I've mentioned this to a few of my friends, and when I have kids, it's something that I'm definitely going to go and do. So this is valuable information to me. I think it's quite cool. But when I was growing up, I had an aunt who would make me write stories or paragraphs about my week or my weekend as a kid, right? And every single time I would explain, like, you know, we went to the park and I couldn't, you know, throw this or whatever. But every single time I used a negative word, like couldn't, she would make me rewrite the whole sentence to only use positive words. So all of a sudden, part of my vocabulary as a kid started becoming a lot more positive. And I think that's part of eliminating the negative and the things that don't really work out, you know, like, staying positive and staying feeding your mind with healthy things is so important. So important.
At this stage, you know, the coronavirus has definitely something that is everywhere. It is everywhere. And I think...
But we're in the peak of it right now.
Yeah, we are. I think for me personally, the biggest thing is more the restrictions than the actual virus. I mean, I think I'm a strong, dashing man. But I think the element of not being able to travel and not being able to know when I can and, you know, can't do a seminar because I have seminars, which I'm supposed to do.
You can't travel.
I can't do
it. Makes you want to travel so much more.
So much. But I think, I mean, what I'm trying to do, and for me, right, this is one of the things for me, when every pivotal change in my life that has happened has always been connected to a period of my life which I had no control of. When I first worked for the estate agency, when I was trying to get into the estate agency, it was recession 2019 and the markets were really down. It was horrible. It was literally like this, but fear, and no one knew when it was going to stop. And I remember reading the Rich Dad Poor Dad book and it talked about, you know, finding opportunity when things are down, right? And I remember trying to get a job and not getting the job because everyone was like, you're inexperienced, markets are down, why the hell will we recruit you? You're 18. And finally got one, and I remember that there was that period when I was reading that book and it was talking about, you know, seizing these moments, and I figured a way of how to basically convert landlords that were trying to sell their properties to renting them for not 12 months but for like 2 years, even 3 year contracts, which would break records for me in the office. But I feel like that viewpoint I had throughout it was this is my opportunity, but where is it? And I'm in this moment now and I'm feeling exactly the same. This is an opportunity, but where is it? I think if you move away from the noise, there's so much more we can do within the time. There's so much more we can improve. We can take away the ignorance of time being our solution and actually us being the solution. Does that make sense? Because it's so easy to say to ourselves, oh, don't worry, next month, oh, it'll get better by then. But where you have nothing that can connect to knowing when that's even going to happen, what can we do inside? What can we do, you know, about what we do? If you have a fashion line, if you have an agency, if you have anything that's to do with a service, what can improve? If you have inner questions that you haven't answered, what could you address? And I think that's a way I'm trying. I'm not going to say I've mastered. I'm trying to incorporate within this time frame. Mm-hmm. What are you doing as somebody you were flying to San Francisco? You were moving to San Francisco. We had our last catch up last week. We shouldn't even be here, right?
But here we are.
What are you doing to mentally adapt to this as an entrepreneur? Because as an entrepreneur, a lot of things, I mean, shipping, I'm sure, affects. And this is not just a health issue, but it's actually economical. How are you?
I think my main goal, I'm not a professional on this whole situation, obviously. I'm not an expert, but all I know is what can I do for myself, like you said, or for the business, and how do I get better? And I've sort of given myself the next 3 weeks to learn skills and do things that only requires me being by myself to stay in. And what can I learn online? And what can I learn sitting by my laptop? What can I learn? What can I do being on my phone instead of sitting at home, ordering pizza, watching Netflix, and not doing anything? How do I get better? Because 3 weeks from now, hopefully everything will be passed over and we've moved on. Hopefully. And by then, I want to be better than I was when we went into this. I want to have a version of me pre-corona situation. And I want to see how good can I get post, like once we're done with this. What can I have created for myself? So I've gone in with like learning about e-commerce and learning about, you know, all this, like e-commerce, it's a big freaking thing. I said e-commerce as if it's nothing, but Google ads, YouTube ads, Facebook ads, managing your ROI, learning your analytics, learning your traffic, seeing where people are coming from, seeing how that works, testing, campaigning, and just figuring things out online and really trying to focus on that, you know, instead of, am I worried? I'm more cautious than I am worried, you know, and
that's okay, right?
That's okay. Fine. That's normal.
It's okay to feel.
It's absolutely healthy.
There's a segment of the podcast where I take a chapter of my book, best-selling book, Become Your Own Hero Again. And I just go into...
I like the clapping sound you had there.
Thank you. I just want to get... Well, we go into a chapter from it and we see your intake on the chapter.
Ooh.
So the chapter we're going to... Just the title, and I'll give you my abbreviation, is... It's quite fitting as well. It's self-acceptance. right? And nice. I think in times like this, we really get the luxury of really sitting with ourselves and actually really understanding what it is that we feel,
mm-hmm.
right? The point of the book for me was to give people 17 principles that they could apply within their life to create more clarity, structure, and financial stability.
Mm-hmm.
And that chapter to me, before anything, before any dream, before any ambition, is about self. Because I think people want this solution to be on, you know, when this happens or if I get that, but they don't start with self.
Mm.
For me, one of the biggest self-accepting periods I had, especially with before I wrote the book, was going back to Uganda. I hadn't been to Uganda since I was 12 years old because my dad passed away when I was 8. And traditionally, even myself, when we pass away, we go to, we've got like an ancestral ground. We all get buried
the
there.
The whole family.
Yeah. So I had gone there last when I was 12 and hadn't been back since. So the partner I was with before was insisting I go. And I was like, whatever, whatever, whatever. End up broke up like you do. And then I end up going. So,
like
so I had, so I went to Uganda and I had to come to some acceptance with the loss and acceptance with my ignorance to it and just how I was trying to be occupied with everything else other than addressing that emotion. And for me, it was one of the most freeing and I'm proud of myself for doing that part because it wasn't about business, it wasn't about work. And I used to, you know, I've always put value in those areas, and taking that trip and being vulnerable with myself enabled me to see, one, how extensive my root, my family tree is, and you know that my ego is not, you know, I didn't bring myself into this planet. There was two people that got together and did what they had to do to make me who I am today. And just that root
just
and that connection.
Think about the chances of that happening. Sorry.
Yeah,
but yeah, okay.
And it gave me strength. and it's insane, right?
Yeah,
and, but it gave me strength. And off the back of that, off the back of my own self-acceptance, I wrote my book, my first book. And it gave me clarity on
awesome
energy
book.
And things of that nature. So I've always seen self-acceptance as something that can, you know, give you the extra battery to know how to navigate through the roles. What are your views on self-acceptance?
I like what you said, like focusing on your inner instead of your outer mm-hmm. is mad important. Like I really vouch by it. Like it's, you can't control anything that happens outside here. This is all external, you know? But the one thing I can do is focus on what's inside me, what's internal. How can I focus on this? And then people's perception or external things are changed based on who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every single time you have a conversation with someone, it's always a mirror conversation, right? It's wherever this person is or wherever that person is. The conversation can go anywhere, and that's where it leads to. So focusing on your inner and a part of self-acceptance is key. You know, I think it's really important to face your fears. I think it's really important to accept who you are, you know, and roll with it instead of trying to avoid it and all of that. But yeah,
is there anything specific you've had to, any self-acceptance you've had to have in any of this journey this far?
Like give me an example, like what about you?
Self-acceptance for me, I had to accept that my staff are gone and I've got to find a new one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not gonna, not a new one, but I had to accept the change. I think as a business owner, so much control, and you got to realize not only do we not control the world like it's playing out, but we don't control anything. Everything is flow, and it's our job to embrace that flow and be open with it coming and going. It's when we try to control that we actually create trauma inside of ourselves, because it's false. I can't control if the person that's with me, because they say to me yesterday they're going to see me tomorrow, that they're going to be there. I have no control over that. I don't have any control physically, spiritually, or mentally. That person could wake up in the morning, I don't want to work with you anymore. That person could wake up in the morning, sadly pass away. That person could wake up in the morning and say, I don't want to meet you anymore.
Things change, right?
Yeah.
All the freaking time. Mm. Like, it's every single day, there's something and it changes and things go and, like, things happen. And you just got to accept things and move on.
Yeah.
Like, there's one step is the self-acceptance. Moving on is another big step that you got to take, you know? Your phone.
It's been going off a while now.
You're an important guy, man. I get it.
No, it's true. But the last question I do have for you is this journey you've had so far.
Yeah, man.
It's been very interesting.
Amazing. I love it.
What is it? I mean, what is it at this point? Because you seem to be someone that's a business driven, but you seem to be quite philanthropic. I can't even say the word. Philanthropic. Yeah. Otherwise, that the word? Philanthropic. Yeah. Yeah, I said it there. Yeah.
See, I didn't even attempt to say that.
What is it that you really, from a meaning perspective, want to do in this earth? What is Saif Siddiq? What is it you want to be remembered for?
Oh, good question. I always want to leave a change somewhere, somehow. You know, by the time I leave the planet, leave it better than when I found it. You know, in any which shape or form. There's a lot of things wrong with the world. You know, there's a lot of things that are broken. And if I can contribute my two cents towards one of the problems with a solution, I realized that we're the adults now. We're the ones that decide what's happening. A couple of years ago, that wasn't the case. I was still the kid and the adults were making the decisions. But after a while, you're just like, wait a minute. Okay, I gotta step up now. And I actually got to go and do something. The chances of being alive is so, like, it's insane. Like, whether you're into cosmos with the earth being positioned the way it is, whether you talk about your mom and dad, the potential chances of them meeting and having you, like, that's one in a quadrillion chance that you're alive today, right now. That's a blessing on its own, and we got to be grateful for that. Yeah. And make the most of who we are, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, you don't just want to die, and like, life can be taken away like that.
Mm.
And if you want to leave something like a legacy for people, then I think that's beautiful. Because at the end of the day, we're just humans that trying to want to help each other. We're social beings. Like, this quarantine thing is making everyone anxious just because we can't be around the loved ones. You know, that's crazy.
Mm.
So try and help as many people as you can, whether it's, you know, raising awareness for a charity, whether it's refugees, whether it's education, whether it's energy poverty or food or whatever, you know, just try and make the world a better place. I think that's the main goal. That's the main aim.
Well, I think it's very incredible what you've done and what you're doing. And even just seeing you with the solar energy and things that you're bringing into the tech space.
Yeah. It takes a while, but eventually it'll work.
You know? For someone,
I've spent 10,000 hours on the solar thing before it actually pops off. And it hasn't popped off yet, but yeah.
It's a process, but it's funny because I think it happens to the best of us. We're so ingrained with what we're doing, and sometimes we miss what we mean to people you're probably focused on your own logistic, where someone's looking at you and looking up to you. And I think it's always important to carry that because it is a responsibility. What is it you'd say or advise anybody at this point with all going on? That feels stuck.
Mm. We all feel stuck a lot of the times. So I've been practicing for this moment for quite a few years now, you know, not knowing exactly what's about to happen. Because just before this, we had Brexit.
Mm.
Just before that, we had Trump making all these weird decisions. He still does. But, you know, there's always uncertainty. And try and control the things that you can control, I think, is important. So try and be better. Try and eat healthy. Don't forget to exercise. Like, all these, like, basic things that drive positivity or motivates you or inspires you. I think at any time, it's right now we need to be doing that. Self-reflect. Try and get better. Eat healthier. Call your loved ones. Tell them you love them. Like, these basic necessities of life, you know. Mm. I think it's a good time for everyone to reflect. And hopefully, like, obviously it's a problem, you know, whether it's the repercussions of a virus like such, or the virus itself. There's a lot of problems, and just try and make the most of it, man. Like, try and stay positive, because once you go down a spiral and you're worried, then after, like, let's say after 3 weeks it sorts out, then where are you gonna be? You know, victims don't win. You know, you gotta be a leader, and you can't just don't believe the hype as much as, you know, you think. Because we're overthinkers in the first place. I am, at least.
Mm.
You know, so if I'm consumed with too much media and too much this and too much that, it just becomes too much. Who says it's true? at the end of the day, it's just a couple of pictures on the screen that's telling us something, or a quote on Instagram that you're scrolling past, and that's what you believe, and you create your own scenario in your own head. But who knows what's true, right? I'm not saying it's a conspiracy thing, but try and be calm, you know? Mm. Just try and get better. That's all we can do.
Wow. Safe, Sadiq.
My brother.
Thank you for risking your life, your lungs, your chest, your time.
Thank you
listen,
for having me, man.
It's been a real, real pleasure.
Pleasure.
And I am, like you always know, an avid supporter.
I appreciate know at some you, point, man.
You're going to be in Silicon Valley doing what you do most.
At
with
some
about
point
seven
this
tech
year,
companies.
I'll be there. San Francisco, Silicon Valley, Bay Area, hit me up.
But listen, thank you very much for being on my podcast, Genius Dropouts. And I look forward to hearing more, as I always do. And brother, thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Honestly, I don't understand how you can drop out and call yourself a genius. Does that make you a genius dropout? The Genius Dropouts Podcast
with Leonard Sekionda.